I speak. Who can understand my disappointment? Without the son of Nanda Maharaj, my heart is broken. Text 17. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always expressed bewilderment and lamented in separation from Krishna. At such times, he used to recite the slokas from Ramananda Roy's drama known as Jagannath Vallabha Nataka. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is taking shelter of Ramananda Roy's Jagannath Vallabha Nataka. In text 18, Srimati Radharani used to lament, "Our Krishna does not realize what we have suffered from injuries inflicted in the course of loving affairs. We are actually misused by love because love does not know where to strike and where not to strike. Even Cupid does not know our very much weakened condition. What should I tell anyone? No one can understand another's difficulties. Our life is actually not under our control. For youth will remain for 2 or 3 days and soon be finished. In this condition, O Creator, what will be our destination?" I'm just noticing that the hour in these verses is capitalized. So Radharani is speaking. She's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead's servitor. And she's speaking as if she were an ordinary person concerned with fleeting youth and loving affairs that are temporary, and yet they must be enjoyed to the very moment. Radharani is in great distress. And so, we can appreciate that she's taking Krishna to be very callous, and she feels cheated and abused by love. Now, who is love if it's not Krishna? Actually, Krishna is love personified. He's the essence and personality of love. As love personified, he takes pleasure in testing the limits of his devotee's love for him. So this is Krishna's game. Krishna wants to see. Within the scope of love, there are many different types of love. They talk about tough love, and they talk about gentle love and sweet love, beautiful love, etc. All these different types of love are there. But what is the essence of love? All of those different types of love are actually embodied in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. He is the one who makes love. He actually creates what is love, what we know as love. And how does he create that? By expanding himself. As he expands himself, lovable objects manifest. He loves himself, naturally. Everyone loves himself. But Krishna can expand himself. And he can give to these different expansions completely independent, apparently independent, mentalities. And yet at the same time, the connection is there with the Supreme Personality, the original Supreme Personality of God. These expansions are considered Supreme Personalities. They're considered Krishna, actually. So these expansions, although they're separate from Krishna, and although they have a mind that is acting separately from Krishna, they can create a wonderful pastime, a wonderful world of variety for the Supreme Lord to enjoy. The Supreme Lord is about enjoyment. He wants to enjoy. Prabhupada was asked the question, why is there anything? And he asked that the question be repeated several times. Why is there anything? And Prabhupada said, for pleasure. That's why things exist, for our pleasure. So Krishna has created the world. He's created the spiritual world and also the material world for his pleasure. So Radharani touches on a number of things here. One thing she says, we cannot understand the problems of others completely. Empathy is not possible completely. We can't completely empathize with someone. It's interesting to note that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to the material world is Krishna coming to experience the mood of Radharani? What is Radharani's situation? He's trying actually to empathize with them. Sometimes when we have a mate or a friend and they have some difficulty, we try to empathize. And we try to bring them out of that difficulty. And the fact that we're not completely one with them in their immersion in that difficulty, if it's a very serious problem, means that we can actually move away from the problem, get some perspective, and help them, move them out of the problem, move them out of the suffering that they're experiencing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes in the mood of Radharani, and he becomes completely immersed in her problems, the problems that she has with him. And he feels those intently. So we can't do that. We can't enter into someone else and become, you know, an expansion of someone else. I can't become an expansion of Pushkar. Unfortunately. So I can't empathize with him completely. But Krishna, he can do this. So Radha is saying so many wonderful things. Radha is saying we're not in control. And her example is fitting. It is that youth runs away and we cannot reclaim it. We can trust her humility that this is pure. It's a fact, actually, we're not in control. So a devotee, he comes to this realization that I'm not in control. It's like an alcoholic. Alcoholics have to admit that they're not in control and they're dependent on a higher power. Devotees also, they have to admit, I'm not in control. He gives up the pious, righteous position of the righteous person. He gives up that position, which is all about I'm doing the right thing and therefore I'm enjoying karma and so forth. I'm enjoying good karma. He gives that position up and he understands I'm completely out of control. I'm here in the material world thinking I'm the supreme and everything's happening to me. Everything is going wrong. We can never be satisfied. What is it? The millionaires are lamenting, the billionaires are lamenting, they lost $3 billion or $3 million and they're lamenting like anything. You know, oh, was it Donald Trump? He said, why can't I ever get anything I want? You know, he's so frustrated, even in this very wealthy condition, he's so frustrated. So like this, a devotee, he's beyond this. He actually is in a transcendental position. It's interesting, Radharani's lamenting like this, and yet it's contradictory. She's not only eternal, but is also eternally youthful. And here she is saying, oh, youth is fleeting, and I only have so much time, and if Krishna doesn't come when I'm in my youth, then he won't be attracted. You know, when I get old, he will no longer be interested. But she's absorbed, not in her own status and position, she's absorbed in the moment-to-moment absorption with Krishna. Where is he? What does he want me to do? How can I serve him? Why does he torture me? How have I failed him? You know, what a cad and rascal this Krishna is. Back and forth, you know, between hankering and lamenting and renouncing and then again hankering, desiring Krishna. She's given her will completely to Krishna. 100%. And she's given it all over to Krishna and he simply teases her. And this is her ecstasy, actually. It's because Radharani is an expansion of Krishna, she knows exactly what Krishna wants at any particular time. And she acts accordingly. If Krishna wants to be insulted and henpecked and bothered and pushed and abused himself, then she does that. And she never goes over the line. She never goes too far. Unlike some. But she never goes too far. The pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world are enacted on a platform of pure humility. I heard this in a class recently, and I was so struck with it. That this pure humility, all of the in Vrindavan, you see these different dais, you know, places where they have the Rasa Lila and so forth. They have a different grounds and. Where they enact these different plays of the pastimes of Krishna. But in the spiritual world, all of these pastimes are enacted on a platform of pure humility. So that's foreign to us here in the material world. We're not so humble here. We're not so convinced that humility is the actual path, it's the real solution. Often the word humble and humility are confused with the word humiliated, meaning to be embarrassed. You know? In other words, Krishna, when something bad happens to us, we wonder, why has Krishna humiliated me? Why has Krishna embarrassed me? And so this is our situation, because we're still hanging on to this false ego, to this desire to be in control and to be well-regarded and so forth. We feel humiliated by different abuses that befall us in life. If we're not noticed, if we're not praised, then we feel humiliated. You know, why him? Why not me? Like this. I'm very familiar with this. You know. With these moods and these attitudes. And they see us, the karmis, they see us pay obeisances, and actually they're embarrassed for us. Oh, look, these people are falling down in front of God. You know, it's like, oh, how embarrassing. You know. Oh. It's unbelievable. They can't appreciate. You know, they show always the Muslims on the television, sometimes on the news, you know, paying obeisances. They're paying their obeisances. Islam means surrender. Means surrender. So we're in the same mood. Surrender. That's our business. Surrender to God. And so, those persons who are simply treating God as an order supplier, give me this, give me that, I want this, please now do this, do that, you know, they can't understand this surrendered mood. It's like for them, God is like a very powerful thing, like the lion tamer. He's very powerful, you know, and the lions are up on the stand. He makes them go up on the stand by cracking the whip, and that's the position they really want to be, is in the lion taming position. They don't want to recognize that God is so powerful. Yes, God is powerful, but he should work for me. They put themselves in this position of being God, and anyone who actually surrenders to God, they feel embarrassed for him. So these are great complaints against Krishna. You know, number 19, text 19, I'll read. Srimati Radharani spoke thus in distress due to separation from Krishna. Oh, what shall I say of my distress? After I met Krishna, my loving propensity sprouted. But upon separating from him, I sustained a great shock, which is now continuing like the suffering of a disease. The only physician for this disease is Krishna himself, but he is not taking care of this sprouting plant of devotional service. What can I say about the behavior of Krishna? Outwardly, he is a very attractive young lover, but at heart, he is a great cheat, very expert in killing others' wives. So if this is the only encounter or the only scripture you ever read or ever heard, if someone read that over the radio and you just happen to tune in, you're like, what, these people are worshiping this guy? But actually, it goes on, it gets better, it gets more exciting. These are great complaints against Krishna. He's a cad, he breaks up marriages, he misleads women, leaves them destitute in their minds. And this is God? Yes. Yes, this is Krishna, he can do anything. He can give pleasure or he can give pain. But the interesting thing is that the pain that he gives is also pleasure. And devotees take it as a pleasure. Because if it satisfies him, they're satisfied. But if one recognizes Krishna as the source of our experience, then all is well. Actually, Krishna is our consciousness. Krishna is our consciousness is based on Krishna's awareness of everything. We have no existence beyond him. We're part and parcel of Krishna. We're tiny sparks of this spiritual energy that is the Supreme. We have that. Consciousness is a result of that. Consciousness is not a result of the matter or the body. Consciousness is a result of our allegiance or our kinship with Krishna. And so, once we understand that we're in this small sense, non-different from Krishna, then we can experience with him and enjoy with him. But we're always dependent. We're always in that dependent position. We never become God. So, Krishna is forgiven. We forgive Krishna. You see, we realize he's part of us. and we take shelter at his feet in pure humility, we're also forgiven. We are also forgiven for our transgressions against Krishna. Krishna is so much more anxious to have us return to him than we are anxious to return to him. But when we fall into this humble mood, when we fall into a humble appreciation of Krishna, we humble ourselves before him, the union becomes possible, the union of ourselves with Krishna. So at that time we can experience ecstatic transcendental love for each other. I mean, Krishna, of course, is always experiencing transcendental love for all of his creation, all of his living entities. He's the father of everything. And we can experience ecstatic transcendental love when we fall into that mood. So, why are we attracted to Krishna? He's kind of a villain. He's such a villain. Why are we attracted to Krishna? Because we've seen Krishna smiling. And once a devotee sees Krishna's smile, really your material life is over. Once you actually look at the smiling face of Krishna, the purification is perfect. You're infected, as Prabhupada says. Once you become infected with this disease of Krishna consciousness, there's really no going back. Maybe backtracking, but there's no return to the complete conditioned soul, conditioned state. To look on that smiling face of Krishna and say once, this is the most beautiful person, is to realize Krishna's perfection. To see Krishna as the most of anything is to realize his perfection. And once we do that, you know, we're on the road back to reuniting ourselves with Krishna. And Krishna, he never forgets our acceptance of him. So if we go on to, the beauty of our program here, our Krishna conscious program, if we recommit to Krishna every day, if we come before the deity, if we chant our rounds, if we hear and chant, to recommit to Krishna like this every day perfects our life very, very rapidly. I don't believe any of us that are coming on a regular basis and have been coming for some time would consider going back to our material life as all in all, would consider taking it up as all in all. It simply would not make any sense at all. It would be a great displeasure to cut Krishna out of our life and just pursue economic development or sense gratification. It would be a great displeasure for us. We'd be lost. So we have become, fortunately, we're so fortunate, we've been infected and become addicted to Krishna. And this is an incredible benediction for us. I'll go on, text 23. In the scripture it is said that one person can never know the unhappiness in the mind of another. Therefore, what can I say of my dear friends, Lalita and others? Nor can they understand the unhappiness within me. I'm reading next 23. They simply try to console me. Huh? Did I skip 20? Dear friends, and I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I read several of these verses, didn't I? Okay, maybe I didn't. Okay. I'm sorry. A lot of verses here. Okay. Srimati Radharani continued lamenting about the consequences of loving Krishna. My dear friend, I do not understand the regulative principles given by the Creator. I loved Krishna for happiness, but the result was just the opposite. And now I'm in an ocean of distress. It must be that now I'm going to die, for my initial force no longer remains. This is my state of mind. I'll read 21. By nature, loving affairs are very crooked. They are not entered with sufficient knowledge, nor do they consider whether a place is suitable or not, nor do they look forward to the results. By the ropes of his good qualities, Krishna is so unkind, has bound my neck and hands, and I'm unable to get relief. You can imagine, just picture that. Someone's neck is bound, and maybe his hands are behind him, and he's in a tied-up condition. So Srimati Radharani is saying that this attraction to Krishna that she feels is like a rope, and that Krishna, it said, by his good qualities he ties us to him. The ropes of his good qualities bind us to him. We are bound and we do give up our resistance to being bound, and we humbly surrender. Then we are free. If we give up our resistance to being bound, we are humbly free. We're free. Something. So, text 22. In my loving affairs, there is a person named Madan. His qualities are thus. Personally, he possesses no gross body. Yet he is very expert in giving pains to others. He has 5 arrows, and fixing them on his bow, he shoots them into the bodies of innocent women. Thus these women become invalids. It would be better if he took my life without hesitation, but he does not do so. He simply gives me pain. This verse reminded me of Narada Muni's encounter with Magrari, who was killing animals and just leaving them flapping. Narada even suggested it's better if you just kill them outright. So like this, Radharani is complaining bitterly that Krishna has made her an invalid, that her life force is about to leave, and she just can't go on like this. It's just impossible. Here is the supreme person who is like eternal, full of youth, full of bliss, and yet she's lamenting. This is a pastime. This is a game that Krishna and Radharani play. And we can experience this to some extent here in the mundane material world. In our loving affairs, sometimes people become very, very distraught by their beloved, and they struggle, and they are drawn to complete distraction. You know, sometimes they kill each other, essentially. It's a happening. It's a fact. So what is this about? This is about trying to enjoy. And this is the reason everything exists, for pleasure. In the scriptures it is said that one person can never know the unhappiness in the mind of another. Therefore, what can I say to my dear friends, Lalita and others? Nor can they understand the unhappiness within me. They simply try to console me, repeatedly saying, dear friend, be patient. So Radharani is being asked to be patient by her friends. And it reminded me when one devotee I know, Bhagavat, when he was initiated, Prabhupada looked at him and said, be patient. So that is very good advice. Very good advice coming from the gopis. Be patient. Eventually you will get Krishna. Text 24, I say, my dear friends, you are asking me to be patient, saying that Krishna is an ocean of mercy and that sometime in the future he will accept me. However, I must say that this will not console me. A living entity's life is very flickering. It's like water on the leaf of a lotus flower. Who will live long enough to expect Krishna's mercy? Well, we've lived long enough to expect Krishna's mercy. That is one thing about being a devotee. Of course, we're minor devotees. We're not like Radharani. We perhaps don't get so completely distraught by the lack of seeing Krishna. That's our problem, is that we're not completely maddened by the fact that Krishna's not here before us. But, of course, there's many different degrees of devotees, and there's many different degrees of separation that one can feel. In the spiritual world, there's Vaikuntha. And you can go there and you can have this form, just like Krishna, 4 arms. And you can fly, you can enjoy in so many different ways. And Krishna is held in awe and reverence, simply awe and reverence. Simply you're the servant of the Supreme Lord. And you feel awestruck by the Supreme Lord. Radharani, of course, is not awestruck. Here she is declaiming Krishna and making so many accusations, and she's very upset with him. She's not awestruck. She's taking him as her equal. So we don't know exactly which relationship we have with Krishna. So then that also makes it more difficult for us to empathize sometimes with Radharani. We're just not feeling that degree of separation personally. But we are feeling some separation. We know that life would be much better if we were more in touch with Krishna. That the problems in our life are created when we become less and less Krishna conscious. When we become less and less aware of what Krishna wants us to do. Then we really create problems in our life. And so this repetition of, as Prabhupada said, the elephant bathes and then he gets dirty again. This repetition of back and forth, eventually we get tired of that. And hopefully towards the end of our life we give up so many anartas, so many unwanted things. We have also this wonderful assurance from Srila Prabhupada that this can be our last life, that we need not wait eternally throughout eternities to come back to Krishna. We can actually go back to Krishna in this one lifetime if we simply follow a very simple process. How is this possible? So many sages are meditating for so long to get to this advanced position. And how is it possible? By Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, he's plundering this storehouse of love of God. He's distributing the fruits freely. And here we are, just walking by and loading up. Hopefully we're loading up anyway. So, text 25. A human being does not live more than 100 years. You should also consider that the youthfulness of a woman, which is the only attraction for Krishna, remains only a few days. Amazing. So again, Radharani's taking herself to be an ordinary human being. Text 26. If you say that Krishna is an ocean of transcendental qualities and therefore must be merciful someday, I can only say that he is like fire which attracts moths by its dazzling brightness and kills them. Such are the qualities of Krishna. By showing us his transcendental qualities, he attracts our minds, and then later, by separating from us, he drowns us in an ocean of unhappiness. Yo. In this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lamented in a great ocean of sadness, and thus he opened the doors of his unhappiness. Forced by the waves of ecstasy, his mind wandered over transcendental mellows, and he recited another verse as follows. My dear friends, unless I serve the transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes of Sri Krishna, all my days and all my senses will become entirely useless. Now I am uselessly bearing the burden of my senses, which are like stone blocks and dried wood. I do not know how long I will be able to continue without shame. So it is a shame, actually, what we're doing here in material world, just going on and on, uselessly bearing the burden of my senses, which are like stone blocks and dried wood. I remember a wonderful play that the devotees gave when I was just becoming a devotee. One night I happened to meet them at this hamburger joint. It was a it was called, anyway, I don't know, it was a red something or other. And it was in Tallahassee. And there was a small stage in the corner for music performances, usually one or two people, you know, it's a very small stage. And so these devotees came, Rupa Vilas and Chandrika and Purna Pragna and what's his wife's name, Amaya? Narayani. Yeah, they came and they did plays. And one of the plays they did, they were so kind, they engaged me. They said, come on, you be in this play, you know, we'll just tell you what to do. So the play was, at that time, I was so attached. I was thinking Krishna consciousness is nice, but, you know, I'm so attached. I have so many attachments. So this was the story of the rocks going, crossing the river, and a person holding all these rocks. And so you Panama in the rocks and so forth, and people calling across the river. But if you drop the rocks, you could easily cross the river. But if you kept the rocks, you couldn't cross the river. So we did this little play, and this hamburger joint was amazing. All these people, they loved it. They loved it. You know, it's great. People do appreciate the devotees. You know, they really appreciate. So at any rate, this is our situation. We have all these burdensome things. I remember another incident. I was just writing a friend the other day. So I was trying to make a film. I wanted to have the devotee show up in a dhoti. And so in one of the first scenes, so there was some argument. Oh, he shouldn't do that. No, he shouldn't be in. No. So we went back and forth all these different arguments. You know, he has to look more sophisticated and more cool. And so I said, listen, the greatest film hero of all was completely a shambles, you know, Charlie Chaplin. He had big shoes and, you know, funny clothes. He was shabby and, you know, he wasn't at all attractive in this sense, his big wide hips, you know. So how is this, you know, how is this a fact that somebody has to be so-called attractive? But at any rate, the wonderful mood there, giving up these stone blocks and dried wood. And then, text 29, of what use are the eyes of one who does not see the face of Krishna, which resembles the moon and is the birthplace of all beauty and the reservoir of the nectarian songs of his flute? Oh, let a thunderbolt strike his head. Why does he keep such eyes? So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, better to be dead than unaware of Krishna. Purport, the moon-like face of Krishna is the reservoir of nectarian songs and the abode of his flute. It is also the root of all bodily beauty. The gopis think that if their eyes are not engaged in seeing the beautiful face of Krishna, it would be better for them to be struck by light by a thunderbolt. For the gopis, to see anything but Krishna is uninteresting and indeed detestable. The gopis are never pleased to see anything but Krishna. The only solace for their eyes is the beautiful moon-like face of Krishna, the worshipful object of all senses. When they cannot see the beautiful face of Krishna, they actually see everything as vacant, and they desire to be struck by a thunderbolt. They do not find any reason to maintain their eyes when they are bereft of the beauty of Krishna. So, we should all feel like this. We should all follow in the footsteps of the gopis and try to keep our eyes on Krishna. Krishna is the goal, and Krishna is so incredibly merciful that he presents himself to us in these deity forms, in pictures. We know what God looks like. We know what environment he's in. We have so much information. By the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we have been given a vision of the spiritual world, and the opportunity is there to perfect our eyes, perfect our consciousness and our awareness of Krishna, and leave this material world with that consciousness intact. We've seen so many devotees depart from the material world with their consciousness intact, and it's a very, very glorious circumstance, a glorious death. A glorious death is so much more auspicious than birth. We see these young babies come, and sometimes you look at them, you can see, oh, this is an old soul. This person has been here before. This person is actually very happy to be here again. It's just doing his baby thing, you know, sucking on a bottle or playing with whatever he's playing with. But he's very satisfied to be here again. And so that's something we don't necessarily want to do, though, is come back. We really would like to finish up in this particular lifetime. Prabhupada encouraged that. Because there's always a chance that one may have a temptation, very strong temptation, befall him and not be able to pursue his Krishna consciousness. But now, those of us who are old and getting old and our old souls, if we're intelligent, we recognize that this is the opportunity of not one lifetime, but billions and billions of lifetimes, and we take that opportunity to become Krishna conscious. So any comments or questions? Pushkar.
I understand from Bhagavad Gita that the soul's never born, or how does a soul become old? I mean, this is a common thing amongst the karmis, they say that, but why have devotees adopted this mode of thinking? I mean, I know some babies in the movement, they come out looking like old guys, that's true, but it doesn't mean that older soul, the soul is eternally manifest.
Well, what that refers to, as far as I'm concerned, is that someone has actually matured. Old is generally considered mature. So when your soul matures, although it's eternal, it's ever blissful, it's ever fresh and so forth, when it matures, you lose your taste for so many things that are mundane. To me, that's what I mean. So some of these children, you can see their taste for the mundane is pretty limited, and they're feeling very happy in their auspicious condition of being born in a devotional family. Now that, of course, can change. With puberty, so many things change. In India, when I was in India, there was an article in the newspaper, and usually the newspapers play down spiritual life pretty much, but this is an article about reincarnations in the Sunday magazine. And this newspaper itself had done great research into finding out if reincarnation was a fact or not. And they had gone to many, many places, many different villages, and scouted around and said, what is the proof? And they talked with thousands and thousands of people, and they came up with a conclusion that reincarnation was a reality. They had so many different instances of people going from one village to a couple of villages over and remembering their family members and having affection immediately, and that family member would have affection for this stranger, perfect stranger, and then that person would be able to talk and so forth. And this usually, these kind of encounters and these episodes would happen when the child was young, you know, about 7 to 9, somewhere in there. Because, you know, the child was articulate enough to speak at that time, but not overcome by puberty, which generally just throws you into, wow, I got to live now for the moment. You know, that kind of thing. It just puts you into a whole different mood. So an old soul is someone who recognizes his previous situation in the material world. If one is a devotee, he gets not only the maybe the feeling of I was here before, but he gets the instruction from the Bhagavad Gita. He gets the instruction from the spiritual master about the repetition of birth and death. Then we can consider that person old. I don't know what the karmis mean by that. I have no idea what they mean. I mean, actually, a karmi would know, okay, I'm repeating birth and death, I want to make my next life better, you know.
They have this idea that you're advancing toward some nondescript area, realm, but...
Yeah, right.
I suppose. So.
Towards the void, advancing towards the void. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes, Lakshmi Sringham.
It's amazing to hear about, you know, we're actually getting some insight into the mindset of Srimati Radharani, both through the medium of Radharani herself and through the medium of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I remember reading something that was like, you know, there's so many apparent contradictions in our philosophy in one sense. I remember reading something that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote, and it's called the Love Locket. And Krishna comes down as a demigoddess, disguised as a demigoddess, and he's asking questions, you know, and he asks about the nature of love between, you know, this nature of love of Krishna, and Radharani, the first thing that Radharani says is, upon analysis, this love goes far, far away. Yet, we see that we're getting like a tremendous analysis by all the acharyas, Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, an analysis of the love of Krishna, love for Krishna. And, yeah. You know, but Radharani's first comment about the nature of love of Krishna is, upon analysis, this love goes far, far away.
Well, Radharani is like very inconsistent in these lamentations. I was amazing. Actually, it reminded me, I was writing these notes this morning. I had this one last paragraph. Let me read this. We have an assurance from Srila Prabhupada about, will we the question was, who will live long enough to expect Krishna's mercy? So we have an assurance from Srila Prabhupada. And Mahaprabhu is plundering the storehouse. And we can all become just like Radha to some small degree, lost in delirious compound of contradictions. Now, Ma Maya was writing the other day. She was typing up notes from these prisoners. And he'd written song. They'd written some poems about Krishna. And she read it out to me, and it was unintelligible. You know, I mean, it was just like big phrases, big words, but they just didn't make any sense in terms of how they were placed. It was an interesting little, you know. I mean, and so I was thinking of that. I was saying, okay, well, here's this prisoner is sitting in his cell all day, and he's meditating on Krishna, and he's writing poems in gibberish, but he's meditating on Krishna. You know, so he's actually maybe in this very advanced position. Who knows? But it's like that. You know, you become, you're no longer logical when you become Krishna conscious. Krishna is beyond logic. You can't understand Krishna by logic. The fact that Krishna is the Supreme Person, that a Supreme Person exists, that's logical. But when you actually try to fathom Krishna, who's doing all these different things, he becomes illogical. And you can't understand him through logic. He has to reveal himself. That's the fact. You could never derive by logic, especially in the conditioned state when we're envious of Krishna. How could we arrive at the idea of God being this incredibly beautiful person, so much more advanced than we are? Doesn't work. And we could go for the other side, you know, God's impersonal, God's nature, and so forth. But we can't really appreciate the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. With a yellow dhoti and a flute. I was looking at Krishna Balaram this morning. They're so beautiful. They look like butterflies or something. They have these wings out, and they have these two black cow horns with gold trim, and they are so beautiful. You know, who could imagine that? That has to be revealed. You know, and then who could imagine the kinds of pastimes that, you know, Krishna and Radharani have, this kind of intense bewilderment that she's feeling. Here she is, you know, the Supreme Person of Godhead servitor, and she's totally bewildered. And this is her desire, to be bewildered by Krishna. She knows that pleases him, and they go back and forth with this apparent frustration, but it leads always to an incredible, beautiful reconciliation. And this is our nature. We're not just, you know, we're not just humming. We're actually persons, and we like variety in our relationships. You know, if you were the same every day, if somebody's the same every day with his family members, and, you know, his wife and his friends and so forth, he's considered a bore. You know, he's always the same. You know, he may be considered steady, and that's good and so forth. But generally, you know, it's not the kind of person you want to spend all your time with. You know. Do you have another comment, Lakshman?
We try to relegate Krishna to the realm of our own empiric understanding. And, you know, what we've experienced through our senses and our mind and our intellect, we try to relegate him to that. And it's so paltry in comparison, you know, the depth of Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and, you know, the concept, the whole concept, when we take it, we look at it, it's so deep that, you know, when we make that attempt, like the plumber came over the other day and he brought with him his son, and our apartment, we have pictures of Krishna everywhere, and he said, you know, who is that? Krishna standing there with a dhoti and a flute and long hair and flowers, you know. And I said, oh, that's God. And he was just like, obviously he comes from a Christian perspective.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me and he said, God? He said, God looks like that. And I said, yeah, God looks like that. And he said, well, how could God look like that? And my answer was, how could he not look like that? what would you imagine him to look like? And he couldn't answer that. We said, well, you know, God is old. And I said, well, why would God want to be old? Is that the perfection of our form, is old age and decrepitness? And we were getting into a conversation. And finally, you know, he just, like a little light went off, and I gave him the Bhagavad Gita, and his father came over the next day to finish his plumbing work. He said, my son Jose was reading all day your Bhagavad Gita.
Really?
But, you know, once, and that, I think that's another point, that, you know, we could not have ever entered into the realm of Krishna consciousness without Prabhupada.
No.
And without that kind of, that depth of association, who was able to take what seems to be an abstract concept, inconceivable concept, and bring it down to a level where, you know, even in our conditioned state, lights were able to go off, you know, in our brain.
That's because he's an acharya, a teacher by example. He believes that Krishna is the Supreme Person, and he's acting on that platform. He's offering his food, he's talking about Krishna, he's directing everyone's thoughts towards Krishna. It's not that he's some professor that gives a class on Hinduism, and this is Krishna, he's the Hindu god, and so forth, and this is the other person. That's all just washing over that person. He's not diving into, you know, the wealth of knowledge and experience that Krishna offers. So devotees, by practicing this, this is such an amazing thing. You know, sometimes I would wonder, why am I doing this every day? You know, every day. Actually, at first, I really enjoyed, you know, coming to the temple every day and so forth. Then over the years, I go through different periods of not being so enamored of going to the temple, and this person doesn't sing the way I'd like him to sing, and this person doesn't, you know, this person's ignoring me, or whatever. So many different things. But by coming every day, there's always, and by surrendering to listening to the person you don't like the way he sings so much, you know, and entering in to the process, you get this incredible spiritual boost and a spiritual appetite, an appetite for more Krishna consciousness, and you transcend all of your little petty, you know, nonsense that's constantly there in the mind, dragging you back into the mundane, dragging you away from Krishna. You transcend all that, and you go to higher and higher platforms of Krishna consciousness. And the wonderful thing, you know, we should take always encouragement that Prabhupada said, whatever level you achieve, you don't fall back from that. So I can see over the years, not that I've achieved some great high level, but looking back and going back is not very attractive. No, it's not something I would want to do. Really, as lazy as I am, I would still like to progress in Krishna consciousness. No. And that's what it's all about, actually. Our going back to Krishna depends on our desire. When we get a desire to go back to Krishna, then it actually will manifest. It will actually happen. If you don't desire Krishna at the time of death, he has another plan for you. He can put you back in the material world, and you can go over his stuff again and again. What was it the other day? I was talking with, what was her name? I'm sorry, I'm having a senior moment for the last 5 years. What's this lady's name? The disciple of Bhakti Tirtha is in a wheelchair. Mother Agrani. That's again. We're talking, you know, and just saying, you know, that there were so many children running around. We were at the feast. So many children. I said, you know, these children are so cute. You know, I love to see them. But the idea of taking birth again and going through these years of ignorance you know, incapacitation in so many ways, not being able to do so many things, and being enamored by this, that, and the other, these stupid little things. It's like, gosh, it's just horrifying. It's horrifying. So that's one of the qualities of the devotee. He's actually aware of the evils of repeated birth and death. So we get to this point where we don't want, although they're very sweet and very cute, I don't want that anymore. I don't want to be in that situation anymore. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.